I was at a Catholic retreat center last week for a few days. It was really a wonderful retreat, mostly silent, and I tried to keep my lack of Catholicism to myself during the time that I was there. But at one meal, I chose to sit. There was a silent room and a talking room for meals, and one dinner, I decided to go into the room where people were talking, and, well, what do you do, Lucy? I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister. What is Unitarian Universalism? You can imagine I get that question quite a lot. And it's evolved over time, but the answer that I really feel comfortable with now is where I say, oh, they say, what do Unitarian Universalists believe? That's right, what do they believe? And I say, well, we don't really focus on belief as Unitarian Universalists. We support each other in our own path, but our focus is on how we act in the world. Our focus is on creating a world of justice and compassion by the things that we do. So that raises a question for me. Are we doing that? How are we doing that? Our seventh principle, of course, speaks of the interdependent web of all existence. And part of respecting that web, I think, talks about our own personal behavior. Taking care about the choices you make and the way you behave in the world. Tending that web and respecting that web means compassion, having compassion for yourself and for all beings. That Mother Teresa reading, I think, does a nice job of sort of kicking us in the pants a little bit about choices that we make and thinking about the greater good. I would change the end of it, for those of you who are not theists, to something other than between you and God. I may say that it's between you and the web, or it's between you and the goodness of human nature. So I think a lot about that question about what is our responsibility to other people in the world. I think about how I'm choosing to live my life and whether it's consistent with my values and what I believe and what I live as a Unitarian Universalist. Driving is a wonderful little microcosm that can help us reflect back on how well we're doing in tending the web. It's the perfect place to sort of play out the drama of life. You don't know anything about those other people in the car so that you can project whatever you want onto them. You see all sorts of good and bad behavior, and yet cooperation is necessary, right? We all have to move down that road in a way where we don't run into each other and we don't cause accidents. But of course, what we see is often self-centered and competitive behavior. It's like this anonymity of being in the car and no one knows you sort of allows you to bring out your worst self. There's a lot of ego and narcissism in driving in and of itself. You're in this little steel box driving down the road. This sense of your own universe. So many drivers see it as a belief that they really do have control of the situation, when in fact it's limited control. You control the steering wheel and the direction that the car goes. There's one of those license plate circular things that I love, the person that says, as a matter of fact, I do own the road. But the truth is, we're dependent on other drivers for our safety. There's an implicit understanding of our interdependence, even if we don't really realize it, and we don't necessarily act in that recognition of it. So, this sermon is advertised as a confession. So here it goes. Driving does not bring out the best in me. Of course, the problem is with all those other people. They're driving too fast, they're passing on the right, they're tailgating me, or my personal blood pressure raiser is the person who pulls right in front of me and then slows down. Hey, I have places to go, people. Now, of course, if I do those things, you know, if I do any of those things, my behavior is totally justified, right? I know what I'm doing. My intentions are clear. They're the selfish people. Often I'll judge someone who's doing the same thing. You know, they do a merge and I'm all over them with judgments, and I do the same merge. And there's a really good reason for that. My timing is impeccable. Of course, you know, the bottom line is that I'm a better driver than, you know, well, most of the people on the road. Now, I have to say my ego was a little diminished by something I read in Time magazine that said that 93% of people think that they're better than average drivers. Some of you may remember that cartoon from years ago of Goofy. I think they showed it in driver's training. And Goofy, you know, the Disney character, he's at home, friendly dad, eating breakfast, comes out of his house, whistle, oh, all happy-go-lucky, and then he gets in the car, and the devil horns come out, and steam's coming out of his ears. Yeah, maybe that describes me just a little bit. But it's not really as simple as devil and angel. And then we have on the cover of our order of service that little drawing, you know, the guy driving, he's got the devil. Let them take their turn. Don't let them in, the devil and angel on each side of his shoulder. You can be a devil and an angel at the same time. Angels feel anger and frustration as well as devils. There are a lot of intense emotions expressed on our highways, and I think it's gotten worse in recent years, and it's gotten worse since that article that Mike read from the National Transportation Safety Division. So my own confessions and challenges aside, what can we do as drivers, as people trying to live according to our values in this world? Well, one of the things we can do is bring compassion into the situation, and a recognition that we can't change other people, but we can change our responses to them. That we can manage our own reactions and our own emotions. That I can manage my own reactions and my own emotions. There's a Buddhist nun that I really like her work, Pema Chodron. Some of you may have read her book. She wrote Start Where You Are. I highly recommend her if you are interested in Buddhism and practical ideas. I have a reading here from her specifically about driving, giving some advice on what to do when those feelings come up during driving. She says, let's say the other driver makes you really angry. You breathe that in. The idea is to develop sympathy for your own confusion. The technique is that you don't blame the other driver, you don't blame yourself. You simply own your anger. It takes a lot of bravery, and it's extremely insulting to your ego. So you breathe in. Then you breathe out sympathy, relaxation, and spaciousness. Instead of just a small, dark situation, you allow a lot of space for your feeling. Breathing out is like ventilating the whole experience, airing it out, fresh air. What you're actually doing is cultivating kindness towards yourself. It's very simple that way. You don't think about it, you don't philosophize, you simply breathe. You own your feelings and then aerate them. Anger is a powerful emotion, and it serves a purpose in our lives when it motivates us to behavior that supports life and transformation. But it can be extremely unproductive if it's just a reflection of our own stuckness. Our unwillingness to recognize that the way we're doing things, the way we're living our lives, is ineffective. It's not productive when it's about how our need for control is not working for us in this interdependent world. When I'm driving and I have my judgments about other people in the car, when I have my anger about the behaviors of other drivers, I'm not really different from those extreme drivers on the road. I have a piece of that. I like to think of myself as different, but it's all on a spectrum. I get angry about people cutting in, you know, some of the famous even drive on the shoulder to cut in to avoid the merge, or people that use the carpool lanes when they don't have two people in their car. This creates a tremendous amount of anger in me. But then I think about the anger or rage of someone who has been out of work for 2 years and can't find a job, or someone who can't afford health care for their children, or is losing their home to foreclosure and they can't get anyone at the bank to listen to them. Right now, we're watching things happen. We're watching anger be expressed in many places around the world. Ferguson, Missouri is one of them. You ask, why would people destroy their own town? But it's hard to imagine, most of us in our lives, what it would feel like. Years of lack of control and feeling of helplessness and no options, how that might play out in an expression of rage. I think about young black men in this country who have limited options and feel like the world is closed off to them. I imagine what their rage, what their anger must be like. Pema Chodron has some advice, some suggestions around this. She says, sometimes in that moment of intense anger that we have, you get a glimpse of why there is murder and why there is rape, why there is war, why people burn down buildings, why there is so much misery in the world. It all comes from feeling that rage and acting it out instead of taking it in and airing it. It all turns into hatred and misery, which pollutes the world and perpetuates the vicious cycle of suffering and frustration. Because you feel the rage, therefore you understand you have some of the kindling and the connection, and you can understand the rage of all sentient beings. And that understanding, well ventilated, can open the door to compassion. I try to be a good Unitarian Universalist. I try to respect the interdependent web. And for me, the way that I can make a difference in this world, the way that I can bring compassion and change, is by small changes in my own behavior, owning my own emotions, owning my own anger, taking responsibility for them. So one of the ways that I've done this in terms of my driving issues is by creating what I call micro ministries, micro driving ministries. I have several of them, and I rotate them so that they don't get stale, you know, so that they stay fresh. So one of my first driving ministries is the ministry of the yellow light. So I used to get really angry at people who would slow down and stop for a yellow light. Are you kidding me, people? I could have made it through that intersection. So now I breathe, and I'm the one that stops for the yellow lights. Of course, if I'm going 50, I don't come to a screeching halt. I try to use judgment, but I'm the one that stops. And I realize that maybe the solution is actually to leave a little earlier for my destination. You know, always being late for things or always putting yourself in that stressful place of rushing is really a form of self-sabotage. It's saying you're not worth taking your time and feeling less stressed about your time for getting there. I have the ministry of the pedestrian. This one is a strong mindfulness ministry because it requires paying attention to who's trying to cross the street. This is not always the simplest one because sometimes the other drivers have to cooperate, and so the poor person's trying to cross and people in the lane next to you are like zooming by, and the pedestrian's like, no thanks, really, it's okay. I don't want to risk my life. Another really challenging one for me is the ministry of the merge. It's So this is where, you know, you're on a road, say, and somebody's trying to pull in from a parking lot. And my former self would have judged their worthiness as to whether I should let them in. But now I let them in. The challenge, of course, is that sometimes they don't thank you. So you may make space for someone to come into your lane and they may not thank you. Make space for them anyway. The ministry of the yield is my current extreme challenge. This is very hard for me. I consider the yield both the weavers, you know, the people who think, oh, there's 2 inches of space in the fast lane, and then I'm coming over. You know what I'm talking about, those people? So former me, and only occasionally current me, would block them. I'm not going to let you into this lane. I am the security guard of this lane. Another one is the people who, you know, when there's reduced lanes and the people, they zoom up in the ending lane and then they just jam it. Oh my God, those people drive me crazy. Okay, Pema Chodron, breathe into it, breathe into it. You know, I read in the driver's handbook that my little blocking technique, oh, actually, sometimes I would move over into the merge lane and just stop my car so that they couldn't go any forward. Because I am the security guard of the merge. I am in charge of the merge. The driver's handbook, my father was studying from his driving test, and I read in the driver's handbook that what I'm doing is a form of aggressive driving, blocking people. I thought that I was helping the world, right, by stopping those terrible people. So my challenge is ego, right? Ego. I'm thinking I know the answer. I'm saving the world from these difficult drivers, breathing in, aerating it, loving my ego, saying, you know, you're okay even if you aren't the security guard of the mergers in this universe. You know, when I think about all these micro ministries and these forms of behavior and the aerating it, and the word that really comes foremost to my mind is humility. Is there room for humility in driving? Is there room for humility in our lives? I think I have this idea of what I think is the humble driver. He's driving a 1965 Volvo. It's a he for some reason. Driving a 1965 Volvo, buttoned up shirt, you know, driving down the road, right? The humble driver. All right, so now I'm going to have a 21st century humble driver, an icon that I can relate to that will help me in my challenge of living my values on the road. My humble driver drives a Prius, empowers, of course, my humble driver's a UU, that goes without saying, drives a Prius, empowers pedestrians, has their ego checked, is responsible and caring, and owns their own emotions on the road. My new model driver. In our competitive world filled with overblown egos and extreme sensitivity to being disrespected, humility seems a mild and insignificant virtue. But I believe it's what will save us in this interdependent world. Because at the core of humility is this recognition of interdependence, that it's not all about us. At the core of humility is this awareness that the small things that we can do make a difference. Each humble act, each opportunity to control our ego and offer compassion to ourselves and to others. This is my faith in action. It's not about what we believe as UUs, it's about what we do. It's about how we act. Do I believe that letting someone merge into the road will make a difference? I do. Maybe not at that exact moment of the merge. Maybe not that particular person. But maybe one of the times I let someone in on a merge, that person's having a bad day. Or maybe that person has lost their faith in humanity. I believe that it is the culmination of these small acts, taking responsibility of our emotions, and offering compassion to ourselves and others really make a difference in the world. And these are the most powerful tools that I have to change the world. So may it be.